Welcome to Manager Tools. The Manager Tools Data Feedback, Part 5. This cast answers these questions. What are the data Manager Tools has gathered about delivering feedback? How have you gathered data about how to deliver feedback? How did you develop the Manager Tools feedback model? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Folks, you're hearing this in the middle of April, but we're already booking dates for client events in May all the way through the end of the year. There seems to be some pent-up demand for in-person training. We went to Detroit and San Diego recently. We have public conferences occurring. I'm going to Minneapolis and to Portland, and clients are starting to prefer in-person. Depends on your company, whether or not they'd want to do it, but I would just encourage you, if you're thinking about it, to reach out and talk to us about timing and schedules and so on. Things are going to get tight, I'm predicting, in the next 30 to 60 days in terms of the remaining year of our schedule. I hope to see you. Okay, so now, let's keep going. In our third large test, over 500 managers, over 2,500 directs, we tightened our guidance, tightened it up a bit, and asked managers to be more prescriptive when they delivered feedback. We included a basic model. Tell them what they did and what was the result of their effort. Now, I got to be honest with you guys. I have some dates here, but I don't have some dates for this other thing. CCL, Center for Creative Leadership, not really a competitor of ours, but you might say that, in North Carolina, they have a feedback model called Situation Behavior Impact, SBI. And I like it. I mean, it's close to ours. I like ours a lot better. And we have data. So I don't remember whether I was aware of CCL's SBI at the time. But again, it's similar. I don't like the situation part at all. I do like the behavior. I do like the impact part. And when people compare us to SBI, compare the feedback model to SBI, we consider that a huge compliment because of the quality of
CCL. Yeah, CCL's pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
And both models spring from solid research in behavioral psychology. And this test, where we tightened up the guidance, all those of you who are complaining that we're recommending things that are micromanagement, we measured even higher performance improvements with no change in the increased trust scores. We say again, managers can actually increase trust scores by starting to give more regular feedback in a more structured way. They're even better. When more structure was given to managers in delivering their feedback in the form of models and scripts, here's what I love about this. The amount of feedback reported as having been received by directs increased. Some cases as much as 50%, but on average it was 20 to 25%. But 20 to 25% is enormous.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. And here's why, guys. I'll tell you why. We interviewed the managers. They didn't know what to say. They were afraid of being wrong, and they didn't know what to say. And all we did was say, well, okay, say this. Okay, I'll say that. Now, it helped enormously that we briefed the managers and then we briefed their directs for them. This is the progenitor, of course, of telling managers you should brief your directs before you do something. Never introduce a change to how you manage people without first introducing that change. We don't do it anymore. We tell managers to do it. We might should try, Mike, a situation where we tell a company, hey, look, we'll train 25 of your managers. And in the last 3 hours of the training, I want their directs to come in. And I want to explain to them what they got. Or have the managers immediately go to a room where the directs are waiting and have them give a briefing with our slides.
And practice it.
Yeah, even
with their
better.
Directs. Yeah, you know, I always found it interesting when you first shared with me the feedback model, because my observation was that directs always wanted feedback, right? In my organization, they always wanted feedback.
Your organization,
They just weren't getting it as much. And the model, the script, if you will, for me, was very clearly for the benefit of the manager and not the direct. The direct was just waiting for the feedback.
Yes, exactly.
And the problem with managers getting feedback is they just couldn't get out of their own heads, right? Yep. They were worried about how it was going to be perceived, what the reaction of the direct would be, and they didn't want to mess it up. And so as soon as you gave them a script, they're like, oh, okay, I'll do this.
Yeah, but then we had assumed based on discussions with both managers and direct, that some of the increase was a result of there now being no doubt when a manager was giving feedback because he or she followed a specific script.
That's way more important than I would have initially believed, right? That there had to be some way that the direct knew that, okay, well, now we're going to talk about performance And yeah, and exactly. When 90% of it is positive, it wasn't a bad thing, right? I mean, folks, I just keep reminding you, like 90% of the feedback should be positive, right?
Well, and we also assumed that the script made them more comfortable, but many of them said, yeah, it did. But increases in performance and trust improved for virtually all managers, irrespective of whether they describe themselves as uncomfortable with the nature of the script or not. So having the script mattered. Of course, it mattered to directs, right? It was clearer, and the manager knew what to say and gave more feedback. In smaller studies going forward after this, we continue to refine our models, and we spent more time interviewing managers and directs for clues for improving feedback volume and results. We love it. It was like turning a dial. If you could figure out a way to have feedback go up, you would get better performance, whether it was good or bad. These refinements basically ended up being what is now considered our standard four-step model. The recommendation to brief directs on this change in feedback delivery before they started using the model came from managers themselves. We discovered we did not invent or create briefing first when we looked at managers' results that were notably above the averages. When managers briefed directs on the model they would use, the script they would use, and/or that they would be more specific, feedback volume increased. Trust increased, at least slightly, and directs' concerns and complaints about receiving feedback were down by about nearly half, 40%. I think it was like 41, 42%. When we asked many managers about this, many just said, I did it because that's what I wanted my manager to do if I were the one starting to receive feedback this new way. Of course, that's a classic example of the Horstman-Middleman test, right? What you want from your manager is probably what your directs want from you. And we believe the trust score increased more when we briefed because directs saw and heard managers doing what they said they would do.
Yeah.
And look, I admit something, guys. We never thought to examine, to go through the data and examine for cases where managers had in fact briefed their people about what they're going to do, but then had not followed through in any significant way. We might have found some interesting data there. It was an oversight. Sorry. Now, look, once this briefing became a standard part of our training, our next study, 400 managers, 1,900 directs, test group, control group, showed the same basic increases across the board in the test group performance improvements. In the test group, performance improvements higher than without the briefing, because now virtually all managers were briefing, and slightly higher trust scores. Control group performance and trust remained the same. I always loved it when we got basically the same data there. That meant that whatever change we had made, we were going to be able to isolate from being a different study. And look, during this time, we were continuing to pore over interviews with managers and directs involved in our studies. God, I used to remember Friday nights and Saturday mornings early before the kids got up, reading over these things and reading pencil and pen and on forms and then written on the back of the forms and yellow stickies, just days, nights where I would, I almost have nightmares about being overwhelmed with manager input.
Do you remember anything that like specifically stuck out when you were initially reading these things? Anything like hit you hard?
Yeah, I'll tell you what stuck out. I'll tell you two things that stuck out over and over and over again. My team were amazed. We were teaching this stuff. And we were amazed at what we read. They would circle stuff and they'd make bam, bam, bam with their pen and they'd poke holes in the paper. The two groups that were amazed were my team and directs. But I would argue that managers, they loved it. But managers couldn't really show how they felt because managers aren't really supported by organizations. Executives are. Directs are, but managers aren't. Of the three, managers are the least supported. The backbone of the organization and basically unrespected. I don't want to say disrespected, but unrespected. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but directs loved it. I mean, they loved it. We interviewed directs like, this is really cool. Some of them liked the fact that they were in a study. Hey, can I see the numbers? Yeah, you will at the end. We shared numbers with everybody. And the clients were like, no, you can't do that. I said, I ain't doing it unless you let me share the numbers. We're not doing lab rats here. These are human beings. And they'll really be impressed that you trust them. I remember one executive once says, I'm not sure I trust them. Well, and you know me, Mike, I'm not shy. I turned to him and said, maybe they know that. What does that mean? Well, maybe you don't trust them, but they're trustworthy. And so the problem is you.
Well, I never.
Yeah, I you never.
Know? Yeah.
Foghorn, Leghorn, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. One of the significant themes that came up in our discussions and in our reviewing work and so on was managers' inability to deal with directs pushing back, to negative feedback. A lot of managers obviously new to giving feedback. They were new to negative feedback. They were new to the model. One of the most common sources of conflict with directs that either argued about what actually happened or insisting that they had good reasons for doing what they did. Those were the two common pushbacks. There were others. There were, it's interesting. There were no comments of racism, despite the fact that we had many managers and directs of different races. We made many recommendations to different managers about how to handle these things, and most of them were not effective. During one internal Horseman and Company discussion, someone read aloud one of the manager's recitations of his direct's comments regarding having good reasons. And I said out loud, I said, whatever, I don't care. And that was kind of followed silence by silence in the meeting. And because I basically saw it for the first time, I said, no, look, I'm not saying I don't care about what that guy said. That's not what I mean. What I mean is the organization doesn't care. Think about it. We're asking managers to give feedback because it's part of their jobs. But clearly, they're not giving feedback, and they haven't gotten in a whole lot of trouble for not doing it. At some point, when you don't do something that is supposed to be part of your job, but you don't get in trouble for it, you cease to believe it's part of your job. You don't have to do it. They're not measuring this. I'm not in trouble. Look, you get in trouble for stuff when stuff gets measured. That's the whole point of measuring, not to get people in trouble, but to keep track of things. But people seem to forget that. But here's the thing, guys. Nobody has ever made the case to managers why it's a part of their job. And it's a part of your job because of how the organization survives to serve society. Look, I'll say it again a different way, something I said a few minutes ago. If an organization puts out a new product and nobody buys it, you know what the resultant lack of revenue is? That's feedback. That's right. It's feedback from society, whom the organization exists to serve, to the organization. You are in a symbiotic relationship in your organization between your organization and society. Now, have you ever heard of a CEO that went on TV having paid for ad time telling society that the company meant well with a product that came out that didn't sell and then given all the reasons why the company did what it did? Of course you haven't, because it doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is because CEOs are smart. They know nobody in society who gave them the zero revenue feedback cares that they had good reasons. All society cares about is the product isn't what they wanted. Good reasons don't matter. Behavior matters. Results matter. That's it. Like it or not, like it or lump it, too bad. You can hate me if you want. Knock yourself out. There's a long line of folks who don't like me. And oftentimes I end up saying to people that I quote from Churchill, a picture of whom hangs on my wall about 3 feet from me here in the office. And it says, you have people who hate you? Good. That means you stood up for something in your life. Okay? So I stand up for managers. And I'm telling you, what most people think about this is wrong. And look, it's even more than that. When society gives that zero revenue negative feedback to a company for a bad product, there's another kernel of truth here. They're not just saying, I don't want this. They're also saying, do it differently next time. Okay? That kernel is the key for a lot of help for us managers, because the purpose of feedback isn't about the past. It's about the future. Now, there's nothing we can do about what we've already done. The purpose of given performance communication isn't to revisit the past, to punish or to reward. It's to influence the future. Now, some people say, no, I was taught it was to punish or reward. Well, what would be the purpose of punishing or rewarding somebody? Well, to change their behavior or to increase their behavior. Yeah, exactly. all you're doing is pointing out the middle step, which nobody likes, rewards and punishment, by the way. So you might as well just skip it. By the way, if you have a trust score, just talking to your directs can be seen. If you have a high trust score, just talking to your direct can be seen as a reward. And look, what this means, guys, is we ought to be telling managers to do two things. First, they need to brief their folks not just on the model, but on the purpose of feedback, which is effective future behavior. It's not about the past. And only managers trying to punish people make it about the past. And that will reduce incidents of directs who want to revisit the past. Second, we need to train managers to not engage with directs who want to revisit the past. Notice I'm saying we're not going to engage with directs who push back, because that's not the purpose of the conversation. I'm trying to have a conversation with you, Ms. Direct, about a mistake you made. Actually, you hear it as about a mistake you made. I'm talking about the future, and you want to argue about the past. Well, guess what? Every once in a while, it's good to be king or queen. And in this case, I'm the king, I'm the boss, and I started this conversation, I had a purpose with it. You're trying to subvert this conversation to your own ends, and I don't want to do it, and so I'm just going to walk away. In fact, if you guys know me, knowing all this, it might come out, if I were the one giving feedback, as me saying, yeah, well, I don't care, going back to my comment in the Horseman and Company meeting. I can say that to you, because you won't see that as me telling you go to hell. You'll see it as me telling you, that's not what we're here to talk about.
We had a really popular podcast, Feedback and the Shot Across the Bow, that talks about this very issue. It's just, it's one of my favorite podcasts, yeah, to be, well, being clear.
It's mine too. And I used to love, we learn more all the time about managers and about feedback and so on. But I used to spend a couple minutes in every effective manager training telling the story about why we call it Shot Across the Bow, what a shot across the bow is in naval, essentially legal proceedings, the law of the sea, and why it's so powerful.
Yeah, the great thing, if you understand it, you have trepidation about giving feedback, and particularly a lot of managers, that's what they worry about is the pushback, right?
Yes.
If you listen to and understand feedback and the shot across the bow, you will never be afraid of giving feedback ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't have to do it. Hey, folks, I'm on the road again. I'm going to Portland in May 18th and 19th, to present an effective manager conference and effective communicator conference. And so I'd love for you to come. If you're in the greater Portland area, please come and shake my hand. I think if we still do that, I know I still do that. And tell me about your experience with COVID and about your career and how we can help you become a better manager and a better communicator. We'll be following all appropriate protocols at the session, but I'm looking forward to presenting in person again. Hope to see you there. Now, look, let's go further. The next series of studies we did were smaller, 500 to 750 managers, 2 to 3,000 directs. During this time, we had settled on the value of briefing first, so that was the standard in these studies, and on focusing on behavior. None of that changed. And we tried different verbiage 2, 3, or 4 times. And one of the things that came out of these tests was that managers, almost always without guidance, couldn't simply jump into a conversation. Managers always had to have some sort of introductory comment or indicator that served as an on-ramp or an introduction to the conversation about the direct's performance. Sometimes they say, hey, I want to talk to you about the meeting. Some said, can I speak to you? Others said, I'd like to give you some feedback. Now, my point here is none of this was in the model we had taught them. We basically had a 3-step model at that time. To us, the model at that time was tell them what they did, behavior, tell them the results of what they did, and then either thank them or ask for something different. Always with a positive tone, because feedback was about a positive future. But when we asked directs about the feedback they were hearing, they almost always mentioned this on-ramp statement that the manager had ad-libbed and we hadn't taught. Now, we've always joked here that this is not fantasy tools, it's reality tools. We don't teach things that won't work or haven't been tested and shown to be better than any other random effort. We realized that these managers' realities was that jumping right to what a direct did was either too abrupt or too awkward or whatever, but it didn't matter. I didn't care what the results were. They wouldn't do it. So we stopped teaching that. So we started testing on-ramps.
We tried statements. I want to talk to you about your performance. I want to share something with you. Hey, let's talk about that meeting and how it went and what you did. Teaching managers on-ramps improved implementation rates, but didn't have any noticeable impact on trust or performance. So, good. More feedback. But when we turned the statement into a question, we got improvements in trust and even more so in performance. We didn't realize it at the time, but the fact that a manager was willing to ask, and remember now, we have trust scores here, and they were willing to accept no for an answer. If you ask a question of your directs and they trust you, they will give you an honest answer. So if you ask, can I give you some feedback? They know they can trust you to say no. And they know that if you wouldn't brook a no, you wouldn't have asked. By the way, it's a good way to ask yourself whether or not your directs can trust you. Ask yourself whether or not if you asked them a question and they said no, whether you would feel like you could get away with saying, yeah, let me ask that again and see if you can give me the answer I'm looking for. The moment you do that, you're breaking down trust. So when a manager made a statement, direct said they felt obligated to listen. But when managers asked, directs felt the manager was asking for agreement and buy-in to a conversation about performance. Direct said they felt empowered. They didn't use that word. That's an HR word. I probably said that word 10 times in 15 years. And that you go anywhere else, you go to modern websites that purport to talk about managing and people and culture. Everybody wants to talk about culture and leadership because there are no definitions for those things. You could say anything you want because they have not been back to the hard, nail-biting, diamond-hard truth of measurement and behavior. So being asked made directs more likely to listen. They also said they appreciated the respect they were being shown. They knew it was the manager's job to give feedback, but the manager was saying by asking it, hey, I got to give feedback, I know that, but it makes no sense for me to do my job if it's not going to have an impact. So I'm willing to ask you right now to make sure you're on board before we talk about this. And that's where the feedback model is now. Four steps. Ask first and honor the no if you get it. Then behavior, then outcome. Now, I'll tell you one more thing that I really like, and I'm reading from a separate document. I've found some additional documents. When I put these show notes together after spending, I don't know, it's probably taking me 6 months to go through some of the data. And we were measuring all kinds of things. I don't think I've mentioned it before. One of the things we measured was how long feedback took. In some cases, we asked managers to try to time it. And that didn't work. And then in some cases, we asked directs how long they thought it took. And then we just started asking both manager and direct, and we used, you know, anecdotal data. When we went from three steps, now this is going to shock some people, and I'm sorry, but when we went from three steps to four steps, it decreased the length of time that feedback took. Even if you discard the cases where directs said no. Adding the ask step, going from three steps to four, and allowing directs to opt out, took feedback length from 49 seconds on average to 27 seconds.
Why do you think that is? That's surprising to me.
Because directs don't push back when you ask them first and they've agreed to the conversation. The pushback we get from people is because the manager, when managers say, well, my people push back. Yes, because you're doing it wrong. If you do it right, directs won't push back. You don't have a high trust score. You haven't worked on your trusting relationship with your directs. The single most important thing you can do is build trust with your directs. You can like it or not like it. You can be an anti-person person if you want. But if you don't have high trust scores, everything you do is harder. Okay. And your experience, why your directs do what they do, is a function of what you do. If you change your behavior, your directs will behave differently. So work on your trust and then ask first. Make your feedback sooner and smaller, not larger and later. By the way, I'll come back to sooner and smaller in a moment. And you'll discover that pushback goes way down. But they don't believe that because they've never seen it. Well, they've never seen it because they're on a different continent.
Right.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else. Sooner and smaller. I've mentioned before that incidences of feedback went up. I want you to know something, guys. I want you to think about this for a while. Those of you who have listened to us for a while, you'll love this. We told managers to give feedback. We did not assume that they magically had in their brain, I'm going to start giving feedback about small things. They did not. They applied our guidance to a bunch of situations that they would have considered requiring feedback before, which tended to be situations where they waited until somebody had made big mistakes and or had done something repeatedly, and so they had a case to make as if they were a prosecutor going to court to get a guilty verdict, which they believed, I'm sure, that a guilty verdict would reduce the amount of pushback they would get. And of course, it did not. It only increased it. But by telling them, we want more, managers naturally moved to giving feedback earlier in the process of someone creating a pattern of good or bad behavior. In other words, we never taught specifically until we learned it sooner and smaller. Managers did that on their own because they wanted the improvements that came from giving more feedback. And more means sooner. That's the only way you can get there. You can't give more feedback by waiting longer. It doesn't work. So I thought that was a cool outcome, that our learning about sooner and smaller was a function of more. They just realized, I'm going to break it into smaller and smaller and smaller parts. It's why Scrum works. We're going to go to, people would say, well, no, I need a whole bunch of work. You need to leave me alone for a month. Everything else is micromanaging. Then you start doing Agile, you do Scrum, you do daily stand-ups, and now we're talking about stuff we do. One task or two tasks a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, being asked made directs more likely to listen. And our present feedback model, I think it's version 14, although there were A's and B's in there, so it may be 2030 or something like that if you counted every single thing we tried on the side and so on, is the most effective delivery of feedback in terms of trust and performance scores we've ever tested, and that's why we teach it.
Yeah, because it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're thinking, well, it's still kind of stupid, yeah, but there's a rule. If it's stupid and it works.
It works great. It's
stupid.
And do one-on-ones first.
Yes, please, and thank you. All right, let me summarize. We shared a whole bunch of data in this cast, gathered over many years with tens of thousands of managers and their directs. A lot of our data goes against the common wisdom, because wisdom isn't common, and frankly, it's wrong. If you want to give lots of feedback to your directs, which is what your organization wants from you, which is what society wants from your organization, you'll do far better with some structure to your delivery. Yes, it will feel awkward at first, but that's the curse of being a professional and being a human, an adult, is you have to fight through those first few times when you learn something new. Remember, you don't stop learning when you get old. You get old when you stop learning. It is awkward. Managers told us that when we gathered data, but it works. And that's what you're supposed to be focused on, folks. Ethical results. Not ethical easiness, not ethical ease, not smoothness, not less hours at work. I don't want more hours, but your goal shouldn't be less hours. Your goal should be the same hours and more results, ethical results. And ethical includes respect for people. That's why we ask first. That's why we focus on behavior. We don't try to invade a person's person, which is their mind, where intent and attitude and motivation exist. We stay in the land of the organization, which is behavior, which is what organizations pay us for. And we do it with a light touch and a positive tone, because that's what you would want. You know, the world is at times a nasty place. It's less nasty than it used to be. But, you know, life without civilization would be nasty, brutish, and short. You have an opportunity as a manager, when you talk about delicate or sensitive things to your directs, you have a chance to do it well and ethically and responsibly. If you don't do it, you've given up that chance. You're giving up your, it's like, it's not trying to take your at-bats. And you know, when you lay your head on your pillow at night, that you didn't do your job. Stop that. Do your job and try it. And if it doesn't work, please send me mail and I'll talk to you on the phone about it. But the great thing about that is I know I won't have to talk to you on the phone. I'll just receive an email saying, well, you're not going to believe it. I tried it, and it works. And I'll write back, why wouldn't I believe it? All right. Sorry, that was long, dude.
Yeah, that was a lot there. But, you know, if you understand the numbers and you kind of see how this thing progressed over
yes.
time, if that gives you the confidence to
yeah.
to move forward, then
yeah,
bless you. Okay.
All right, thanks, partner.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.